Okay, while I'm passing out these sheets, there's two parts of the shiur today. The two parts. The first part, this is the last class that I'm giving on the disengagement. This is the last class of the daily midrash, actually, for this year. First of all, I want to thank Mr. Rabbi App, Rabbi and Mrs. App, for sponsoring, and the App family for sponsoring the daily midrash. They sponsored after Shabbos, so I didn't know, App, and they sponsored in memory of Eli App, which is, I think, a wonderful thing. But this is the last Beit Midrash program. So therefore, what I'm giving you is, it's all one. What I'm giving you is, this is a shikum, I think. This is a summary of the positions and the issues on this disengagement, the legitimate positions on disengagement, from Rav Shurlo. Rav Shurlo is a rabbi in Tel Aviv. He's a very, very well-known rabbi in Israel. He wrote the article in Hebrew. The Hebrew is on the front. But they put it on the ZOA website. I think the RGA, Religious Zionists of America website, and they translated it. So it's worthwhile. I figured it was very, very much worthwhile. It was very much worthwhile to go through his introduction, go through his summary.
Does everybody have it? One more.
That's all one.
That's it. Okay. Does somebody need? I got one more. Okay. Go to page two. Page three, I mean. Page four. We're going to read it. You can read it in Hebrew if you want. He wrote it in Hebrew, which is probably better. But it's worthwhile, but we're going to just read it in English. I'll read it, since I don't have too many volunteers. Oh, you got that story?
Why am I reading English? Do you want to read English?
And it's a decently lengthy article, but he really summarizes all the positions, and we've discussed many of them very well. We're going to do this for a while. The second part of the shiur that I wanted to share with you, actually I wanted to do it first, but I don't have a speaker that we're going to have to take care of, is the video I'm going to show you is part of a shiur given by Rabbi Herschel Schechter. Rav Schechter gave a shiur that was given over the Torah something satellite network, and Rabbi Meyerfeld of Yeshiva Bet Yehuda was kind enough to record it for me. And he gave part of his shiur on this whole issue of disengagement, and I thought it'd be worthwhile to share for you the shiur, and then a couple of the sources from the shiur so that you could understand where he was coming from. Okay, so said Rav Shurlo, the role of the student, page 4, line 1. From the time of that the sages described the fundamental structure of the world, they recognize that a fundamental component is the fact that it is multivocal, including a large number of machlakot, differences of opinion. The masters of collections, they are given by one shepherd. The masters of collections, these are the scholars that sit in groups and engage in Torah studies. These deem it impure, these deem it pure, these forbid it, these permit it, these disqualify it, and these deem it suitable. Beyond the philosophical question as to why there are so many varied opinions, a question that deserves its own discussion, there is just an existential question that the sages planted in the heart of the student who ponders this phenomenon of heterogeneity. How should he choose his own path? To this question, the sages responded. Perhaps the person will say, given the fact that these deem it pure, impure, these pure, these deem it, and these permit it, these forbid it, and these permit it, these disqualify, and these deem it suitable, how can I learn Torah? The Torah teaches us they are all given by one shepherd. One God gave them all to one leader, and one leader said them on behalf of the master of all, blessed be his name. As it is stated, and spoke all these things, you as well, make your ears like a funnel, inquire a heart that listens to these words of those that deem it impure and those that deem it pure, to those that forbid it and those that permit it, to those that disqualify it and those that deem it suitable. This expression is wonderful, acquire a heart that listens. The role of the student is not to decide. The purpose of study in the first stage, before one achieves the level of instruction, is to listen to all of the arguments with dedication and integrity, with objectivity, with a critical sharpness, and to try to understand the truthful aspects of each side. So I have to tell you, on this issue of disengagement, it is such a passionate issue for people. You know, in America, less. But in Israel, you know, it's a political decision. So people have already made up their minds politically before they come to the table halachically. And in Judaism, you can't do that. You have to come with an open mind. You know, I was talking to someone, I won't say who, and he heard this shiur from Rav Schechter. So there's two parts that he said. He said, I told him the first part. And then I said the second part. He said, yeah, Rabbi Morris gave that shiur. He said, yeah, I like that part. That part I liked. I said, well, that's only because you decided the outcome at the beginning. You can't do that in a halakhic discussion. You have to come with an open mind, and you have to objectively analyze the different issues. And once you have an objective analysis, then you have a rav, then you have a teacher, then the teacher can tell you to make a decision. But in the disengagement specifically, you can't say, well, because I politically am X, therefore the halakha has to be. That's not how halakha works. And to be honest with you, Bradley, remember I told you about that that book, the Kaftor HaPela, that was written? You know, that's really what troubled me about a lot of the things that I see coming out of Israel. We've already dedicated our lives to this, and we know that it's important, so therefore it has to be X. That's not the way halakha is meant to be used. Halakha is meant to be looked at as a Jew. You ask an honest question, and you expect an honest answer. And, you know, most often, you know, when people ask shaylos, so sometimes they're honest and say, I'm looking for a hetter. And that's a factor, that's a consideration. But don't ask the shayla if you don't really want the answer.
Go to someone who can give you the answer.
Well, no, you're not supposed to do. What you can do is, if you have different rabbis or different teachers for different issues, so let's say, for example, you know, thank you very much. Okay. Eddie, you could continue.
Well, we know where to shoot in that family.
No, black hat.
Okay.
Or black hat.
Can you plug in the stereo over there? Okay. No, I'm lost. Okay. So when it comes to Pesach Halacha, you would go to, let's say, for example, you know, you have a question about should I say Hallel on Yom HaAtzmaut or not? So you're not going to go to a Rabbi Irons who doesn't say Hallel at all. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to go to that. That doesn't make any sense. It's not his worldview. So you go to a rabbi within whose worldview you have. Doesn't make him not legitimate. God forbid.
Right.
You know, there is that essence. But you can't go to a rabbi expecting a certain answer and knowing I'm going to get this answer. We will too, 42, we too will attempt in this short article to delve into the nature of the scholarly deliberations and reactions regarding what is referred to in Israel as the disengagement plan. We will not deal with its political dimensions, but rather with the aspects that have been discussed in the Beit Midrash and the writings of contemporary rabbis, with the hope that God will not allow us to stray from the truth in our presentation of the issues. And this is why this article is so important, because it's just honest. It talks about the issues straight. The positions advocating active attempts to thwart implementation of the disengagement plan. Let us first follow the argument of those who advocate the refusal of military orders in an attempt to actively thwart the plan. And from that we will understand more about those who have reduced their level of attachment to the state of Israel in the wake of the disengagement plan. Remember I spoke about there are people that are really beginning to question the legitimacy of the state of Israel because of this. So he's going to understand them. It is important to emphasize that these arguments are not necessarily connected, and that there are many Torah scholars who adhere to only some of the arguments which are enough to claim a reduction in the authority of the state. In our discussion, we will focus only on the disengagement plan and will not extend the discussion of other issues on the public agenda of the state of Israel and of religious Zionism. The argument of this school of thought are as follows. One, the disengagement plan is in opposition to halacha and our religious beliefs, does not fall within the purview of the authority of the state of Israel. First and foremost, before embarking on a halachic discussion, there is an assumption that the plan is completely opposite the Torah's position. For according to the Torah, God gave the land of Israel to the people of Israel as part of an eternal covenant that was created between the people of Israel and the land of Israel. The disengagement plan is based upon an assumption that these parts of the land that are being forfeited are occupied territory, land to which we are not connected, but only foreign occupiers. Okay, so it's not our land. You able to plug it in there?
Yeah, I'm going to squeak it here so you don't have to bend down.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you. Do you have a plug though?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, thank you. Two, in addition, the decision to hand over the territory of Eretz Yisrael to the Palestinians is in conflict with the divine plan. We've learned this. Remember, we talked about this, that there's a divine plan. God wants us to have the land. It's a mitzvah, etc. We merited that God should give us the opportunity to return to these territories as part of the great process of redemption reflected in the Six-Day War in particular, and the third return to Zion in general. Handing these territories over to the Palestinians is a negation of the kindness that was bestowed upon us, and an abrogation of our responsibility to the land. Now I must say, this aspect we did not go over. There's a whole other aspect, another shiur, or probably two or three, about the element of what I would call Mashiachiyut. Mashiachiyut? Messianism. And he's right about that. A lot of people say, well, this whole thing is a process. It's a process of the of the Reshit Shmichat Geulatenu. And until now, we've only seen Geula, the redemption, growing. So what would it mean, though, if we have to give something back? What happens to Mashiach? No. What that means, though, is I believed until now everything was part of the process of Mashiach. Is it really part of the process of Mashiach to give land away? Can we really believe that? You might say it's a bump in the road. No, it's not a bump in the road. It's moving back. So why would he have a process of Mashiach that would then retreat? And that's very troubling to a lot of people. Because if this actually happens, then if everything until now has been Geula, 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 and all of a sudden you're saying, well, but this that's happening now is not Geula. Well, then what was everything until now?
But then couldn't you say that it's God has planned everything in his way, and this is part of God's plan to give it back?
You could say anything you want. Would you honestly, intellectually think that that's true?
Why not?
If you want to believe, you'll believe anything. That's true.
Oh.
And if it happens, that's what they're going to say. This is part of the process.
Well, you say everything else in life goes that way.
What I'm saying to you is,
so you're telling me
that the withdrawal is part of the process of the redemption.
Right.
So I'm asking you, it's not part of the process. You have to say that we didn't merit, we somehow lost part of it.
No, it could be what the plan really is, and I'm a big cynic, is to withdraw, have them go back to the way they do things.
And then,
somebody said that to me.
Right. That's what Sharon's real plan is.
It's just the way we should have been beginning.
Well, you're going to put it on the internet, so be careful.
I don't care. That's what I believe.
Okay. I don't believe that. I strongly don't believe that. We're still the Jewish people, and we still have a job in the world.
We still need to stick up for ourselves.
That's true, but it has to be in a moral and ethical way.
Yeah.
You know, part of
that's the trouble with this country right now, too. We keep worrying about morality with an enemy who doesn't have morality.
Okay, that's another discussion. Interesting discussion, but another one. All I'm saying to you is, if you believed... Herschel's nodding, I know. If you believed that it was part of Mashiach, then you have to say that Mashiach got put on hold or Mashiach got interrupted, unless you find some grand plan. Like, really, the Rebbe was supposed to die and, you know, he's going to come back. So, but you think that's a little nuts, right?
I think it's nuts.
But to say that this is really part of the grand plan of Mashiach to get back land, it doesn't really seem compelling.
No,
so then you have to say, well, it was...
Plan.
Then you have to say, it was Mashiach, but we interrupted Mashiach. So if you say we interrupted it, that's big trouble, too. No matter what you say... You're in big trouble.
We let Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon interrupt it.
Yanni's, line 97. Yanni's introductory comments, the disengagement plan is on opposition to halacha for a variety of reasons. And this we have covered. First of all, the state of Israel is bound by commandment to settle the land of Israel as defined by Ramban. Remember, we saw that Ramban inside. And is thus not permitted to make decisions and implement policies that abrogate this mitzvah. Ramban taught us that we are obligated to inherit the land and not to leave it in favor of other nations. There is no greater act of abrogation to the mitzvah than handing this territory over to the Palestinians. We saw that? That's true.
But the thing is that since we didn't follow the mitzvah the first time or the second time, to wipe out everybody and not have anyone around us, and just because having them around would be a bad
that mitzvah, everybody
is time we should wipe them out.
How
this gives us the excuse for this.
Steve, that mitzvah applied only when the Jewish people conquered the land the first time. Everybody would agree that we don't have the right to go and wipe out just men, women, and children today. No rabbi is advocating that.
Yeah.
And even Meir Kahane never advocated that. He advocated transfer, but never advocated genocide. And that's what you're talking about.
I'm just sending them back to where they belong.
All right. You know, I have to tell you, I disagree with you in very strong terms. Yeah. Okay. Four. Not only that, the plan also transgresses the negative prohibition of lo techanim. Lo techanim we did not talk about, but that is a prohibition. The Torah prohibited us from giving non-Jews permanent residence in the land of Israel. The disengagement plan gives them permanent residence, even in areas that are already clearly settled by Jews. Five, the government has no permit to uproot Jews from their land. There are individual rights that are recognized in halacha that even restrict the government. An example can be found in the days of Ahab, who did not have the right as king to appropriate the vineyards of Naboth. The government could leave the settlers there and enable whoever wishes to live under Palestinian rule. However, where am I, page?
Five,
thank you. When the government uproots Jews from their land, it oversteps its authority and acts as an expeller that drives residents into exile, an act that it is not authorized to undertake. Also, in speaking about synagogues and moving graves, the matter constitutes a serious breach of authority. And that I've just touched on, because there are serious halachic issues of destroying shuls. You know, it's forbidden to destroy shuls. You're not allowed to.
Something in the Jewish press about how you had to sit shiva again when you uprooted graves. Is there such a thing?
Sit shiva for maybe briefly. I don't remember off the top of my head. No, not the whole 24 hours, I don't think. All 24 hours?
You had cases where people were disinterred from Hebrew memorials because they welcomed to Israel.
Correct. So for purposes of moving someone to Israel, the halacha permits you to what's the word, disinter somebody, to move them to Israel, or if the grave is in, the grave itself is in danger of disintegration for whatever reason, that happens sometimes, flooding or whatever, or it's called kever avot, if you want to move to a family plot. But aside from those three reasons, you're not allowed to. And every now and then, if you have the Kesher Shalemus, we'll get a request, we want to move it to the Temple Emmanuel, whatever, then, you know, sorry, can't help you. Okay. The six, that's line 8 on page 5. The disengagement plan endangers the safety of the Jewish nation. There is not one security expert who claims that the security situation will improve after withdrawal. On the contrary, many claim that security will be impaired, and the threat will reach the current central portion of the country. And as well known, the responsibility to save life is an important halachic principle. Yet the government is proceeding to endanger the lives of the Jewish people. This must be opposed on the basis of the Torah's principle, do not stand by idly when your brother's blood is being shed. The problem I have with that is that's a governmental decision. When you elect the government, it's their right to make the decision of what's going to be safe and what's not going to be safe. You know, because every situation, especially the Israeli government, every second of the day they have to make decisions about human life and what's going to be in the best interest. So that to me is not a halachic argument, it's a political argument.
That's number 6.
As far as I'm concerned, really, Adati and Anandati. If the guy is religious,
yeah,
in the government, he should be following this. Not the guy.
Hold on, wait. We're only saying, he's giving you one side. Wait. Just be patient, okay? 7. The disengagement plan was adopted completely without the proper authority. The prime minister ran for election on a platform that opposed any unilateral action, and he did not receive a mandate to implement policies other than that. The Prime Minister is obligated to fulfill his promises to the voters. Furthermore, severe aberrations were utilized in the process of passing the disengagement plan. The firing of ministers, the promise to accept the referendum of voters that was abrogated, brutal threats against members of Knesset, etc., etc. The worst infraction was that an opportunity was not given to the opponents of the disengagement to persuade the people either through elections or a referendum. There was no authority to implement the plan without a mandate from the people. According to Halacha, only the Jewish people have the authority to establish policies of this nature. That's a tough one. You know, I think that what Ariel Sharon did was politically brilliant and unbelievably slimy. And both of those are equally true, right? But it was, if you think about it, the way he navigated the Knesset and the cabinet and whatever, don't get me wrong, but it's legal. That's the government that they elected. So, you know...
So you're saying this isn't an argument?
I don't accept that argument. Right, it's morally reprehensible, but halachically to me seems very questionable. It's not a halachic argument. Again, that's what seems to be a political argument.
Number 6 also was...
Yeah.
The other ones are pretty solid, though.
The hardest thing, it seems, is that they're trying to reconcile halacha with political.
That's exactly where I started it.
And it just doesn't work.
Right.
It doesn't happen.
Halacha and politics ever?
yeah. It's a mandate in the Knesset that they only serve kosher food.
Right.
But otherwise, it...
Well, you elected... I'll give you an example, Lahavdil. This is a bad example, but an example nonetheless. So we have a problem sometimes when people get married that the husband doesn't want to give his wife a get. But it's a problem. It's a terrible problem. And we try to take strong steps to make sure that that doesn't happen. But the very bottom line is that when a woman accepts the ring from her husband, she's giving him a certain power. She's giving him the power to remain married. He has the power. That's just the way the halakha system is set up. So what we say to women is, what I always say to women is, know who you're marrying. Because when you're giving him that power, you have to understand that he has that, and you have to trust him with it. So that's a bad example, but lahavdil, in this case, when you give a prime minister, when you elect a prime minister... know who you're electing. So they thought they knew him. Mm-hmm.
But when he ran, he said, there was 5 years ago, he said there's a big house in the state. When he ran, he said he's going to bring Mitzman into the government. Mitzman didn't want to come in.
Yeah.
And there's going to be painful compromises. He pretty much hinted what he was going to do.
Yeah, no, sometimes, what I find, I find it very interesting. I find it always very interesting that people hear and see only what they're looking for. It's totally true. It's absolutely psychologically true. Somebody could say something to you, but you'll interpret it in the way that you want to interpret it in order for it to come out for your own best interest. So now, in hindsight, you could say he's referring to it, but nobody knew that he was referring to it back then. So again, this argument that is halakhically dishonest, you know, it is dishonest. But he did it legally. You know, it's slimy to fire ministers to get a majority. But nobody ever said you couldn't do it.
The only reason he had them in the Eastern Army and the government
right.
is the Labor Party didn't want to join them.
Correct.
He asked the Labor Party to come in first.
40. What are the practical implications for the individual and the community of the fact that the government is conducting such severe political activity without authority? Here, too, there are a variety of halakhic responses, and contemporary religious authorities have ruled according to them in part or in total. So, remember, so now, let's say you say it's also for them to do. So now what? So it depends how you hold. One, first opinion says it is forbidden to contribute or participate in the actions of the government with regard to disengagement. Thus, every Jew is obligated to refuse military orders when necessary in order to prevent participation in activities that are forbidden according to halakha. Any participation in this action constitutes participation in an act of transgression. And we are speaking on a variety of transgressions, from the national transgressions to theft and violating boundaries. For if the government is not authorized to implement the program, it stands to reason that anyone who takes part in it is a thief. Rambam issued a halakhic ruling in Hilchot Melachim, that if a king, we saw this last week, that if a king instructs a person to transgress, he is forbidden to do so. This is a clear case where the government is obligating people to perform actions that are against halacha, similar to an order to desecrate Shabbos or eat a forbidden substance that certainly are not to be implemented. Refusal to follow orders will actually strengthen the army by placing it firmly on ethical, Zionist, and halachic foundation. It is similar to the legal responsibility to refuse a military order that is clearly illegal, a position that strengthens the moral fiber of the army. And we saw that extensively last week. But that is exactly what they argued. They argued that as opposed to the idea that it would weaken the army by disobeying orders, listening to orders would weaken the army, and that they should disobey because that's the moral fiber of the Israeli army. Two, some say no, that's not true. Some say, two, there is a complete individual right and legal responsibility to prevent the actions of the government through civil disobedience. So it's not just that you can't participate, you have to actively try to go ahead and prevent. There is no place for violence, and all of the rabbis who express their opinions have ruled against the use of any violent actions. Nevertheless, it is permitted to actively prevent the implementation of the plan. The main method to attempt to thwart the implementation is to flood all areas destined for destruction with so many people that it will be impossible to carry out the government decision. Now, according to that opinion, would you be permitted to take super glue and glue shut the offices of the government? No.
No, they worked in on
you. No, what they did was, you didn't hear this?
And in front of the traffic,
no,
they
just well,
some, you didn't hear this?
They do something okay. Just...
They super glued 150 offices of the government shut across the country.
What is this?
Sunday.
Violent.
Oh,
really?
Sunday.
Oh, yeah? What's the definition of violence?
Supergluing is violence.
What? How do you define violence?
It's a physical act.
If somebody broke into your house, would you say you were violated?
Yeah.
Huh.
What this is saying is that a bunch of people should go and just...
Right, there's a difference between... Right, this is saying a bunch of people should go, flood the area, and make it impossible. Okay, that's fine. That's different. You're just sitting there. They're trying to remove you, as opposed to going and doing something active to sabotage a government. Three, a small minority of rabbis hold that the lesson of disengagement is that we mustn't disengage from the state of Israel. This is not the state that we erroneously thought to be first flowering of our redemption. It negates fundamental goals, one of which is settlement of Eretz Israel. This abrogation severs our ties to the state of Israel. One of the initial implications of this position is a refraining from viewing Yom HaAtzmaut as a special day, and certainly ceasing to view the state of Israel as the first flowering of our redemption. So it's sad, but the more you were in favor of, and the stronger the position of settling the land had on you, the more now you're pulled away from the state. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, the more it was part and parcel, the more the state was part and parcel of your whole religious persona, the more now you have to rip it away from that religious persona and try to find another.
Are these rabbis among the settlers?
Oh yeah, big time. That's who they would be.
So they're all moving to New York then?
No. God forbid. This, no.
Okay.
Mitzrayim. They want to be like, I mean, I guess, I don't know exactly. God, I don't think it's like the Mitzray Kartel. The Mitzray Kartel live in Israel. They hold to the Mitzray to live in Israel, just don't hold to the government. You can't say, Reshit Tzmichah Geula Teinu, if obviously this government is not engaged in Geula, it's engaged in the destruction of the government, of Israel. You know, I have to be honest, I feel for these people. Because it's a very painful thing. The question really is, should the state of Israel have been such a fundamental part of your religious worldview in the first place? The question really is, I was talking to a rabbi who I respect immensely. I was talking to Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig today. We were speaking about another issue. And when I was in New York, we talked about this. He feels strongly that one of the biggest problems of the settler movement is that they placed Eretz Yisrael too much at the center of their religious worldview. Meaning, a Jew is supposed to believe in Torah and mitzvot. And it's true that the land of Israel and settler Israel is an important mitzvah. But it can't be the most important mitzvah. And if you would ask, what is the settler movement all about in the past 20, 30 years? Miriam, what would you tell me?
Settling Eretz
Yisrael. What about learning Torah and teaching Torah and spreading the word of Torah? And part of that would also be settling the land of Israel.
But that, the first part is to be there, and then everything else will fall.
One gets that sense. And sometimes if you over-focus on something, that could be a very painful thing later on.
Isn't that over-focusing over here? We sent our kids to learn all the yeshivas in New York, and they don't want to do anything for the government, but they won't go there to learn. I mean, all the go there.
Yeah.
They don't support the Israel.
Right.
Yet all their kids are there.
So what I'm saying to you, it's interesting. The difference between the Aguda and the settler movement is a subtle difference. But one can't argue that learning Torah is not a central focus of the Jewish religion. The central focus, learning Torah. Right? Learning Torah, living lives of Torah, and one aspect of that is settling the land of Israel. You should just know. So I was talking to the Shlichat Aliyah last week at the Torah Mitzion's little party. And she was telling me, I said, oh, how many people do you have moving to Israel from Chicago? She said, about 90 people. Which is a lot. So I said, how many families? She said, well, two modern Orthodox families, a couple of conservative families, and a number of Haredi families. So now here we are, we're the Fragmenta Modern Orthodox Zionists. And in Chicago, the majority of people making Aliyah are Haredi. So, you know,
sure.
What?
Korea,
maybe just this year. Is it maybe just this year? It's not just this year. No. So they didn't move to Israel.
It's because the U of M called them to de facto Zionists.
Correct. Who said that? Absolutely. Why? Because they're Zionism. They are, I mean, forget the state, not the state. But love of Israel is an aspect of their religious persona. But when you make love of Israel the main focus, I mean, obviously nobody would say to you, it's my main focus. But if that's all you talk about, and that's all you focus on, and that's all you educate about, you know, that's the most important thing, then somebody takes that away from you, it rips out a large chunk of your religion. That's by the same token, if the Rebbe, if the Rebbe dies, what are you left with? As opposed to the Torah, and the Rebbe teaches me the Torah. So when the Rebbe dies, you find another Rebbe, you need another Rebbe, everybody needs a Rebbe. But when the periphery becomes the focus, then you're in big trouble. And that's a problem. Okay. 97. Positions against active attempts to thwart implementation. On the other side of the spectrum, there's a group of Torah scholars who disagree with the aforementioned positions. The disagreement exists on two different levels. So now we learned all the people that said you can't just engage. No. And by the way, nobody said, I'm not sure anybody who said you can sit in the middle of the road and disrupt traffic. I don't know anybody who said you could burn tires. I don't know anybody who said you could super glue somebody else's office. You're allowed to engage in active destruction in order to prevent this from happening. I'm not sure, and just me personally, I don't think that accomplishes anything. I think that it hurts your cause more than helps it. Between you and me, I'm not sure.
That just makes the other people angry at.
Correct. That just makes them mad.
That means that people actually disagree. The street, somebody may get a little trigger happy.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen. Okay. Disagreement is just on two levels, 104. A disagreement on the basic assumption that negates the authority of the State of Israel to adopt this engagement plan as a government policy. Or, so one says, first of all, the State of Israel can decide what they want, because it's a state. Two, a disagreement on the halakhically permissible ways of reacting to the government's decision that goes beyond its authority. So either you say the government does have the right to decide, or you say even if the government does not have a right to decide, you still have to act anyway.
Still government.
You're still the government, and you are still have responsibilities of a citizen. In other words, one position would contend that it is within the jurisdiction of the State of Israel to adopt a disengagement program. The other position holds that even if it is not within the authority of the state to do so, it is still perhaps halakhically forbidden for citizens to refuse military orders or to try to actively prevent the implementation of the government program. In these approaches as well, the arguments that we will identify are not of necessity connected, and there are many Torah scholars who adhere to only some of the arguments. It is warm in here. Isn't it? It's complicated.
Complicated.
Oh, yeah, it's complicated. I thought you said it's hot in here. Is it just me?
Yeah.
What? You're okay? Okay. What are the fundamental positions of those who hold that the State of Israel is authorized to adopt a disengagement plan? For the purpose of comparison, let us deal with the arguments in the same order as the opposing arguments listed above. One, even before embarking on halakhic deliberation, it is important to establish the guiding principle that dictates the behavior of the State of Israel. In fact, the guiding principle is the welfare of the Israeli nation. The State of Israel is obligated to do what it considers best for the nation of Israel. Can we all agree on that?
No. Israel has to survive.
Israel has to survive, right? Let's assume, God forbid, Israel was in a war, and they had to cede land because they were losing. So should they hold that land at all costs?
Absolutely not.
Or should they, you know, is it withdraw a little bit? It's interesting, in 48, they didn't withdraw. 48, they just... They agreed to a plan. It wasn't like they had land that they gave away. Well, they lost. And then they lost. So would you have argued it's better to surrender or fight to the last minute? I suppose it's better to surrender. They fought as much as they could, and then they surrendered. Okay. The disengagement plan is good for the nation of Israel for a wide variety of reasons. It prevents the isolation of the State of Israel from the nations of the world. It sanctifies the reputation of the Jewish people as pursuers of peace. It reduces security risk to the State of Israel. It reduces the moral yoke of ruling over a people that do not have the right of citizenship. By the way, that's a strong argument. That one always, it's compelling to me. You don't, on the one hand, you tell Palestinians, no, you can't be citizens. On the other hand, you tell them that you can't have your own state. So what are you? Well, it's a good question.
The Maharal
says that
Palestinians
are citizens, and Israel is not. Just like the other nations have no right to rule over us, we have no right to rule over.
It's a very difficult. It's a very difficult problem because they live there. On the one hand, you could say they're there now, though. They're there. What are you going to do with them?
Because their old people.
What? Buy them a ticket. It is good for the economy, and it is good for developing internal cohesion within Israeli society. You know, I talked to Simon Kresher about this, and he says he never understands the Palestinians. What they should really just say is, you know, we all changed our minds. We decided we don't want our own land, we don't want our own state, we want to be part of Israel.
Oh boy.
We want to fight in the army, we want to eat falafel, we want to be part of Israel. Then what would we do?
We'd be in trouble.
We'd be in big trouble.
Well, that's a strong argument.
Well, that's what
the engagement plan.
Correct, that's exactly the point. That's why you could say to Sarah, how do you get rid of 2 million people? So one day, you know, the UN is going to get up and you can't say anything. So give them a vote at least.
This is how you do it.
How do you do it? You give them
a
vote.
Give them a little chunk of that they
correct.
Can go to.
So it's very easy to say, you know, we can't do it. It's us or halacha. But the question is, what is halacha going to do with these 2 million people?
But then the 88% of Gaza that they already have.
Yeah, but you're holding on to it. You're holding on to it economically, militarily, militarily. Militarily, you're holding on to it. You're controlling the flow of goods and traffic. Yeah, you are holding on to it. Okay.
We're stopping it.
If they weren't attacking us, then the army wouldn't have to be there.
For these reasons, the government must pursue this approach. God gave the land of Israel to the Jewish people, so it would be good for them as a nation. It is in this framework that the government must conduct itself. Two, the divine plan is a process of peace. One must constantly advance the direction of peace in order to realize it. The government of Israel is not working against a divine plan when it is attempting to come with arrangements with the people living in the region, even at the expense of forfeiting parts of Eretz Yisrael. 3. The disengagement plan is not against halacha, as demonstrated by the large number of religious authorities, mostly in the Haredi world, but also in the religious Zionist camp, who hold that it is permissible to give up territory of Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews for the sake of peace. Remember, we said, when we learned that Ramban, so we learned the other side. What was the other side? And nobody remembers? We learned the Rambam. Remember, what did the Rambam say about settling the land of Israel?
He did not.
So it's true the Ramban said it's usher. But the Rambam didn't say anything. Yeah, so the Rambam might have said...
That was an automatic that he didn't
have. Now that was the other argument, the other side's argument that it was automatic and assumed. But look at the book, he doesn't say anything. So you know, it's one thing, the way Rav Rosenzweig put it, he said it's very nice, the Kuzari and the Ramban and Rav Kook. But halacha is based primarily on the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. That's how we live our lives. If you ask me, you know, is it kosher or not kosher, you don't first look to the Ramban and Rav Kook. Look to the Rambam. So, what does the Rambam say about this? If you ask me, how could the Haredi world have done this? They wouldn't do something that's explicitly usher, and they wouldn't. They might not agree with you politically, but they would not violate a Torah law. You could say a lot of things, but it's all conjecture.
Yeah, but... We always find that if you don't say about something, we always agree that that's what they meant. It's in the Torah the same way.
No, not in this case.
In 1987, when Shaq and Obadiah gave this back, Obadiah Yosef said for peace.
It would be permitted for peace. Correct. Even by the way,
but now he's withdrawn.
Rabbi Yosef went there.
Because he sees that no matter what you give them...
Even Rav Yaakovson intimated, if you heard this, Rav Yaakovson from Chaldean intimated, he intimated that perhaps it would be permitted when you're getting something in return. Mm-hmm. And he said that was the difference really between Yamit and here. At least in Yamit, it was a bad peace, but a peace nonetheless. You got a treaty. Here, you're not even getting anything in return. So what are you getting? Which is an interesting question, okay? 37, the Ramban was the only one of the Rishonim who ruled that there was an ongoing mitzvah to settle the land of Israel. And although many Rachonim rule according to the position, we hardly find anyone who has written that this implies a prohibition to hand over territory. Furthermore, it is very possible the Ramban himself would not rule out handing over territory for the sake of the people of Israel, when it is better for a nation or in a circumstance when the nation declares that it is unable to protect all of Eretz Israel. 4, we will not enter into the issue of Lo Techaneim in this context. Lo Techaneim means not to appease the non-Jews. However, everyone agrees that the issue of Pikuach Nefesh overrides the prohibition of Lo Techaneh. 5. The government has the authority to decide where the borders of the state of Israel will be. It also has the authority to conduct a permissible war, a Mechemet Rishud, and to obligate its citizens to sacrifice their lives for the welfare of the state. How much more so it is authorized to require residents to leave their homes for the good of the state. The halacha also allows the moving of graves to the public welfare, and there is not a reality that could be defined as public need more than the current situation. This is the very meaning of government, a body that works on behalf of the interests of the collective and at times demanding heavy price from the individual. And we all agree, by the way, a government should kick people out of their homes.
But they can...
Right? Can a government kick people out of their homes?
Yes.
Yeah. So if a government can kick you out of your home to build a highway, they can't kick you out of your home to do something that they feel is in the national interest?
They can move graves.
If it's in the national interest, yes, if it will save lives in the long run. Let's say, for example, in Yamit, somebody was buried in Yamit, or, you know, like in Lebanon or wherever, and you were going to withdraw from there, and everybody, let's say everybody agreed that it was in the best interest of the state of Israel. Yeah, then you would move the graves, then you could.
So people wouldn't have to go.
Correct, that's true. 6, the question as to whether this engagement plan is good or bad from a security point is not a question that is within the purview of religious legal authorities. It is particularly the role of the government to decide such matters, and nobody else has the right to negate this government function. Furthermore, the disengagement plan relates to a number of completely different goals, such as the prevention of the greater danger of delegitimization of Israel that is developing among the European nations, and the establishment of borders that preserve a clear Jewish majority in order to prevent the demographic threat of a binational state. Thus, even if the plan is not sound from a security perspective, the government must implement it to ensure national survival. I find that very compelling, personally. You know, everybody says, so what's the answer? Oh, you know, I don't know.
Is that helping the European nations?
It's not a matter of helping the Europeans, it's a matter of helping... I don't necessarily agree with the ultimate, but I find the argument compelling. You can't shrug it off.
The demographic argument that has been, a lot of people have shown that it's really not true.
Why?
The growth of the air population is not great.
There's still 2 million of them. There's 1 million in Gaza and 1 million in the West Bank. It's a lot. Okay, so let's say you still have your majority.
I don't know the details, but they've written about the demographic threat, and they say it's a myth.
All right. Some do, some don't. 7, the disengagement plan was adopted with complete authority. According to the Israeli law, the Prime Minister is bound only by laws passed in the Knesset, and the plan was created in light of Knesset decisions. It was passed by a large Jewish majority, and it is impossible to argue that it is illegitimate. The discomfort of the manipulative manner in which the law was passed does not negate the legitimacy of the government to adopt it. It's also very compelling. It's slimy, but it's legal. A lot of things that are legal are slimy. Many of the laws in favor of settlement were passed in just such a manner during the period that settlement activity was at its height. And it is now impossible to argue against their halachic legitimacy. I didn't even realize that one.
They use the same techniques.
Correct.
Great settlement process.
Correct.
It's true. It goes around and comes around.
That's true. As stated above, and it worked for you, you know, as stated above, those who negate the calls for refusal to follow military orders can rely on some or all of the arguments. So if you say you can't refuse, you have a lot of arguments to say why. In reality, even if one does not accept any of the arguments and holds that the government decision is illegitimate, he can still argue that it is forbidden for an individual to try to thwart the implementation of the plan. This prohibition does not depend on the question of whether the opposition to the plan has the possibility of success. What are the points that support the halakhic position negating the right of the individual to protect the evacuation plan? Meaning, why should you not have the right to disobey orders? 1, pikuach nefesh. The position of Jewish law is that one should pray for the welfare of the state, for without the fear of the government, people would swallow each other alive. Well, the reason we say the prayer for the United States of America is because government is good. One of the rationales for government is that deep arguments within the nation be decided in the legislature or other government bodies. Transferring the argument to the individual level endangers the viability of the state of Israel. If the army were to begin to determine which orders to implement and which not, not only would the structure of the state collapse and the army no longer be able to function, but it would also, page 7, it would also give complete legitimacy to refusal to carry out orders in defense of the settlements in Yehuda, Shomron, and Gaza. The path to adhere to destruction is quite short. The issue of national survival overrides a lot of considerations that might prohibit participation in the evacuation. It's interesting, in the shiur that you're not going to hear, even though Schechter agreed that was true. If you feel that it will come to be the destruction of the state of Israel, then you should obey. There's only one problem. Nobody knows. If the soldiers disobey the orders, will that cause an improvement in the morale of the army, or will there be the destruction of the army? So, how do you know? So how do you make a decision based on that factor?
You pray,
yeah. 2, in reality, the disengagement actually took place on the day the Knesset adopted the plan. The decision, even if we assume that it was illegitimate, was already adopted, and the peoplehood of Israel decided against the continued settlement of Gaza. As a result, there is no longer halakhic significance to the attempts of the individual to prevent it, as this phase of implementation is not the prohibition. I mean, you're not allowed to govern and then mentally decide, but to implement it is not a problem. That's a little weird. I don't really know who says that. 3, even if this illegitimate plan is illegitimate and opposed to the halakhot relating to the conduct of the state of Israel, we are not disengaging from the state of Israel. The covenant between religious Zionism and the state of Israel did not dissolve in the past because of the fact that the state of Israel did not realize the Torah vision in its entirety. This is true to our distress with regard to a variety of issues, from laws of interest that are not according to halacha to the practices regarding marriage and divorce. This covenant was created because the religious Zionists view themselves as partners in the national enterprise of the Jewish people. For that reason, we are not disengaging. We are not stopping our celebration of Yom HaAtzmaut or our praise of God that we have merited to return to our land to take responsibility for our history on our own hands. That's true. Meaning, and I think that that's a much more nuanced view. It's true that the state of Israel is not what we want it to be. It's true that the government is not what we want it to be. But at least you have to see it's a step in the right direction. That's a great thing. So you'll say, well, they're violating the halacha. They violate the halacha all the time. Nobody justifies that. Nobody thinks that's good. But at the same time, don't pull back and say, well, the whole state must be not legitimate because it's not doing X, Y, or Z. And that's what I told you about when you make one mitzvah the whole Torah. well, if the state of Israel is not going to promote building the land of Israel, then the whole thing must be illegitimate. That's true if your whole goal, your whole understanding of the nature of the state is to build, only to build the land of Israel. But if it's to promote Judaism and to build yeshivas and to give lives to Jewish people and to save Jews around the world, so even if you disagree with one or two or ten things that it's doing, nonetheless, there's a lot to celebrate. There's a lot to enjoy. And I think that's something that you have to remember. Because even if, and personally, you know, I'm against this whole thing. I think it's bad. I think it's usher. I think it's a bad decision. I think that people should not engage in it. But if it happens, I'm still going to say hallelujah next year on my shlo'ot. Because it still is a great blessing that God gave us. The very fact that we're having this discussion is a blessing that we could only dream about 100 years ago. And we should never lose sight of that. Okay. 35, two fundamental issues. I would like to add two marginal points that will serve as background to this deliberation. There are two fundamental positions regarding the essence of the relationship between religious Zionism and Zionist movement in general, and the state of Israel in particular. There are those who hold that the essence of the movement is the great opportunity to realize the commandment to settle Eretz Israel, which is the essence of the existence of a Jewish state. Understandably, the state performs other functions, but its primary function is the fulfillment of this commandment. This is the source of the religious validity of Yom HaAtzmaut. So obviously that's the former, the first opinion. In contrast, there are those who hold that religious Zionist authorities who hold that the existence of the independence is the essence of the state, and the very essence of the first flowering of our redemption. Certainly this reality obligates us to become refined in Eretz Yisrael, but the founding is a political structure. It appears that even though this argument does not relate directly to the position discussed above, it does have great influence. We find that most of those who adhere to the first opinion support refusal to follow military orders and civil disobedience as means towards thwarting this engagement plan, while those who adhere to the second opinion oppose the use of these instruments in attempts to prevent implementation of the plan. Two, there is a serious obligation to consider the day after. The Torah itself engages in discussion of the day after in innumerable instances, from Parshat Ha'azinu to many classical prophecies. On the day after, we will have to return to live as one people, both for pragmatic existential reasons and for halakhic reasons that oppose division within the community. A position reflected in the numerous statements of the sages advocating the unity of the Jewish people and the existence of one nation in the land. Goy Echad Ba'aretz. Every position must consider this fundamental principle and conduct itself with primary concern for the unity of the nation. This does not mean that unity has to be based, God forbid, on the abrogation of the Torah. There are times when there is no choice, when we must for the sake of higher unity, battle for our position and refrain from being partners in particular political processes, and even to oppose them. Yet the basic foundation must be the general manifestation of Jewish unity. And it was such a good summary, such a powerful summary. Rav Shurlo, from Tel Aviv. He's a very big, respected rabbi in Israel today. He wrote this, I think, in Haaretz, one of the big newspapers in Israel. Chazak l'mit chazek, be strong and we will be strengthened for the sake of our people and cities of our God. May God do that which is good in his eyes. May he who makes peace on high make peace for us and all of Israel. So what I would say to you is, we learned a lot of halachas. It's good to go in and know the information. You have to know what the halachic issues really are. You have to know what the opinions are, what the possibilities are. But understand that there are other sides. Even if you're against, so someone who's for it, if he's just for it for political reasons, I'm in favor of it because of, you know, the Palestinians, he has to be educated what the halachic realities are. And then he can make an educated decision and say, you know, Rabbi Rishka's argument is a powerful argument. The soldiers should follow orders with tears in their eyes. Or Rabbi Yaakovson is a powerful argument. But not to be educated, that's not a Jewish option. And I think that also something we saw was that there's tremendous passion and pain regarding this issue. And I think that mostly our part, our role as American Jews sitting over here kind of watching the thing, is to feel the pain of the people living in Israel. These are people who put their lives on the line for Palestine. And they're feeling a tremendous degree of abandonment and isolation. And that if we in some way can help them feel less abandoned and less isolated, even if you disagree, even if you think that they're wrong and that they should be moved, at the same time, you have to appreciate who they are and what they're doing for the Jewish people. And that's something that's much more subtle and much more difficult to do. So I think the answer, you know, rules of disengagement are to have sympathy, to have compassion, to know the issues and to know the halachas, and push comes to shove, understand that we're all one part of one big Klal Yisrael. Okay, I guess we didn't have time to get to Rav Schechter, but you want to see it? I'm out of time. What?
How long is it?
I want to show you a piece that's 10 minutes long. Okay, so whoever wants to see it, okay. Okay. If somebody has to go, there's a...
Person came.
And you want to see? Oh, I care, but... Okay. Yeah. I'm sure you'll make it by the second half.
The last 5 minutes. Everything else is just
going to start. Right.
Okay.
Oh.
I didn't know you're such a...